This is Alaskan Legislative Review, a program of analysis of Alaskan legislative issues and processes, featuring faculty and staff of the University of Alaska in Fairbanks. Today's host is Special Assistant to the Chancellor, Wendy Redmond.
I'd like to introduce our two guests today, Mary Manguso, a faculty member in the History Department at UAF, and Andrea Helms, Associate Professor of Political Science at UAF. Both women are here to discuss the question of ethics. I'd like to begin by discussing in some broad terms what we mean by ethics. There's been a lot of discussion in the Alaska State Legislature this year about legislative ethics. Before we get down to discussion of some particulars regarding that, Andrea, perhaps you could talk about what ethics means and what it does not mean, how we perceive that term.
Well, ethics is a system of viewing behavior and of setting ways in which one behaves, and it involves things like understanding what a conflict of interest is in a public official, so that when a public official approaches a situation where he has a conflict of interest, he knows how to separate his private interest and the public interest he's supposed to be advancing. So it's a mechanism of values that people have, and that's one of the issues that arises in the instant topic, is the question of whether or not there's sufficient shared values among the people who are trying to devise a system of ethical behavior and a code to make a code that is both workable and feasible and desirable, that accomplishes its purposes. Because in order for there to be ethical behavior, there has to be agreement upon what is acceptable and appropriate activity and what is not. And it seems to me that under certain circumstances where people don't share that kind of agreement, particularly, you're going to have real problems.
Well, I think one of the reason that the question of legislative ethics became so critical this year was that the Attorney General of the state, when Norm Gorsuch came in as AG, he made it clear to the legislature that if they did not adopt a code of ethics for themselves during this session, that he would see to it that the common law was applied in questions of conflict of interest and potential unethical behavior. Could you explain what that means, and is it in fact possible for a statutory code of ethics to replace common law?
Yes. If the legislature enacts a statutory code, then that would be what would be applied in all actions involving courts. I'm not so sure that it could be that it would be an effective code of ethics in governing behavior. The common law is simply those principles which have grown up over centuries of practice and probably are not appropriate to many of the circumstances under which a legislator would be operating from day to day. It seems to me that that he's asking for two things. There's really a code of behavior which stands between people who are doing similar things, and it relates to the way in which they perform those tasks. That would be an internal code of ethics, and it would look a lot like what doctors have and a lot like what lawyers have. Then there is a statutory code which regulates behavior which becomes subject to the subject of interest in the legal system, and that would be things like using one's public office for private gain. And under those circumstances, you could make that criminal, and if charges were brought and evidence were secured, then the person could be tried. And I think that's the concern that Gorsuch has, is to outline that sort of behavior.
There are a lot of people who believe that the very term legislative ethics is a contradiction in terms because of the very nature of the political process. That is, the political process being a process involving the dynamics of power, acquiring it and influencing it. Do you feel Now, let me just ask your reaction to that statement. Do you think that there is an inherent conflict between what we're discussing as ethics and the legislative process? Mary, maybe you'd like to...
I think to some extent there is, because people go into politics for certain reasons, to protect what they have. Politicians are supposed to be responsive to existing power groups, and there's a fine line between being responsive to an existing power group and mm-hmm. being unethical. Where the line is drawn varies, but I don't know that you can define it very precisely.
Almost everything seems to fall into a gray area of one sort or another. It seems very difficult to make black and white distinctions in matters of ethics and conflict of interest.
Yes, I think that's correct.
Mm-hmm. One thing about ethics is that the legislature is supposed to represent the varying groups within the society and their interests and their concerns. You have to have some agreement on what's unethical or on what's ethical. I think it's the other way around, on what's unethical. And that's very hard to get in a society that's organized politically. One man's ethics is another man's corruption. And so it's hard to define precisely what's unethical behavior. We know some things, but we don't know for a legislature when he's merely being responsive to his constituency or when he's serving his personal interest, particularly if they are very close.
Or identical
mm-hmm.
in some cases.
Mm-hmm. What are the, do you see any differences in a state like Alaska where we have and appear likely to continue to have a citizen legislature as opposed to a professional legislature like they do in California, for instance? Are there any special difficulties relative to trying to implement a code of ethics when we're dealing with a citizen legislature?
Yes, there are. The whole point of a code of ethics is it describes behavior for a group of people who are doing something similar, and it tends to be providing a service which they do all the time, for which they're specially equipped, like lawyers or doctors or teachers. Legislators are not legislators. I mean, that's not their first job, and that's not their first priority or interest. They're businessmen, real estate dealers, brokers, school teachers in some instances, farmers. They have primary concerns which are very different. And from their point of view, when they are in the legislature, they're torn between what they perceive as a broad general public interest, which they're obligated to serve, a more narrowly specific constituency interest, and then the interest of the group of people whose primary interests are the same as their own.
Mm-hmm.
And if you drew up a code of ethics that was able to accommodate those three levels of concern for every honorable politician in a state like Alaska, he would not be able to use it to define his behavior. He would not be able to go to it and say, aha, I can't do that, I can't vote on that because it's a conflict or because it's unethical. It would be so general.
Mm-hmm.
If you narrow it and you make it highly specific and highly detailed, at any one point in time, probably half the legislature would be unable to participate in the policy process because they would be barred from one or another
mm-hmm.
of their areas of concern as a consequence of the nature of a citizen legislature.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems that's what some of the legislation that has been introduced this year that is attempting to deal with the code of ethics in extremely specific terms geared towards a professional legislator as opposed to someone who has to go out and be a normal active participant in the community. They're very nearly prohibited from having access to the same kinds of things that you and I are, which I think has a long-term negative impact on encouraging people to participate in politics. Your dialogue brought up another issue that's been of some concern to me. When we're looking at Alaska as opposed to California or Michigan or a state that's much larger, it seems to me that we have some very special problems because of the very small population in this state, that situations of potential conflict exist to a much greater degree because of the small population that we have here, and I don't see that that's been addressed in any of the legislation that's currently pending.
It's not really possible. You'd have to have so many exceptions. Like, for example, you can't draw up a code of ethics that prohibits behavior, prohibits, say, a person who's interested in the university from participating in university decisions relating to the university, but not one that also that would be but not prohibit a person who's interested in construction from participating in construction decisions relating to the state. That's what I meant by immobilizing the legislature, by paralyzing them. If it's going to work, it's got to take into account all of the potential exceptions. There are so few businesses that can bid on state projects. Many of those have people who are interested in them in the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to forbid those businesses from competing in a bid process? It's not possible. Mary can tell you what it was like when we had a legislature which was much smaller during the territorial days. And it's even more difficult as you get smaller, but it's not easy to deal with these problems.
Mary, that was a nice lead-in. I'm interested in what it was like and whether these questions were dealt with in the early stages of the Alaska legislature.
Not really. There wasn't. Concern about legislative ethics is a very new phenomenon, dating, I think, from Watergate, I suppose. And in part, I think it's a response of legislators to increasing alienation and cynicism on the part of the general public about what they want to try to address that, and legislative ethics seems to be a way to do it. Initially, when the Alaska legislature first met in 1913, they started with some basic legislation prohibiting attempting to bribe a state official or legislator, prohibiting accepting a bribe, and requiring lobbyists to register. That's all they had. They didn't have any conflict of interest legislation until the 1940s. The legislature was also, as Andrea said, small at that time. There were initially 8 senators in the territorial legislature and 16 representatives. And the question of ethics, the primary force at that time, as I guess everybody knows, was the salmon packers, who were outside non-Alaskans, but they had the money and they controlled the dominant industry, and sent lobbyists primarily to ensure that their taxes weren't increased every year. And you get to the point where in 1937 there was, for example, one measure introduced which might have meant a slight increase in taxes. It was a proposal to actually a memorial asking Congress to allow the territory of Alaska to incur bonded indebtedness up to $2 million, which sounds pretty puny today. But everybody agreed that this item would be good for the legislature. It passed the House 12-4. It was known, it was apparent that it was going to pass the Senate by one vote, and the lobbyists for the salmon packers took one of the pro-bonding senators out and got him so drunk that he couldn't come in and vote the next day when the vote was scheduled. So in a case like that, you only need one man who in a moment of weakness has too many beers or something to undercut essentially what is in the public interest. With the 1949 legislature, they began to be more concerned about conflict of interest. And of course, one of the reasons for the capital move was this concern, not just access, but accessibility and the fact that if we get them in a more highly populated area, we can at least watch what they're doing. But yeah, historically there hasn't been much concern about legislative ethics, partly because people didn't know how they behaved.
Mm-hmm.
Press coverage at that time was very spotty. The legislature generally was not covered routinely by any newspaper outside of Juneau, and the Juneau Empire was quite partisan in coverage. And so people didn't know. That's part of it. Part of it is that it was a small group. One of the ways that was used to try to to deal with the problem was to increase the size. In 1943, the size of the legislature was increased so that the lobbyists for the Packers presumably would have to take three people out and get them drunk instead of one. But the concern with ethics is a very recent thing, with legislative ethics.
Do you think that it is in fact possible for the House of Representatives to fully monitor themselves and for the Senate to monitor themselves? I bring this up, you may know that the current legislation that Senator Josephson introduced, which set up an ethics commission, they had originally included citizen members of that commission, and the legislature then voted to remove those citizen members so that they are strictly in-house committees, and there is a committee for each the House, one for the House and one for the Senate, made up of membership of each body. Just as a model, is that one that might be adequate?
I am not sure whether that would work or not. As everybody knows now, I guess we have investigations going on, and people are investigating the investigators and this sort of thing. And when they start in like this, one wonders if maybe an in-house committee would not just degenerate into a political name-calling, essentially. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I have my doubts given the composition of the legislature as it has turned out to be composed in the last several years. Self-policing presumes a sense of honor and a clear perception of what it is you're there for and some agreement on how one goes about doing the things that you're supposed to be doing. If you don't have that, then a self-policing process becomes a fingering process. And that's precisely what's going on in this particular legislature, is that all of the accusations tend to be coming from within the legislature itself, with people fingering one another mm-hmm. for violations of conduct and for blatantly opportunistic and political reasons. There seems to be relatively little way to govern how one polices oneself.
Well, let me come at this a slightly different way. Mary suggested that a lot of the recent focus on ethics has come from the public, perhaps a cynicism on our part about the legislative process. It seems that the legislature's reaction to that public clamoring for more accountability and more seriousness in their deliberations has been to bring up this whole issue of internal mm-hmm. policing and so mm-hmm. on. And in fact, it's worked. It's gotten the public off their back.
Sure, that's the whole point. That's probably what it's for. it's symbolic behavior, which is very popular in democracies and very popular in this country right now. It's highly stylized, meaningless behavior that's intended to disengage your attention. I mean, we're supposed to be satisfied that because they're making a lot of steam and flurry about ethics, that these are really honorable, ethical people engaged in ethical behavior. And that's supposed to get us off their backs so that they can get about the business of whatever it is they're doing, stuffing their pockets or feeding their friends or, you know, or actually conducting the public's business.
And if historical precedent is an indication, it'll work.
Yes.
Because those things go in cycles.
Mm-hmm.
And once it's addressed, once they work something out, we'll lose interest in the question eventually until the next time something just dreadful happens, presumably, mm-hmm. I think.
Well, our recent history, there have been some pretty dreadful things when we get, you know, major indictments, and the legislature still can't decide with a convicted felon whether or not they should bar him from the legislature. I mean, it takes fairly critical situations here before the legislature responds.
But that's precisely why it's so difficult. What is a legislator doing? He is representing his constituency. The people who should be in charge of whether or not he continues to be a legislator are the people he's representing, the ones who hired him, not his fellows. It makes it very difficult because we allow doctors to decide that some doctors are not fit to practice. But I think that there's a genuine philosophical question about whether a member who has been duly elected of the legislature should be barred by the legislature, by his colleagues, from participating merely because he's been convicted of a felonious act. That's what recall is for. You ask the people who got him there in the first place if they still want him, and then you don't. You abide by that in a logical system.
Mm-hmm. The public is the ultimate
mm-hmm.
judge.
Yeah.
Back to another point in talking about the public being essentially bought off by a lot of legislative flurry on the question of ethics. I guess I'm somewhat concerned and certainly committed to trying to encourage the public not to be bought off quite so easily. And well, I don't think establishing a code of ethics is the appropriate mechanism to demand accountability. It seems to me that there are some changes that could be put into place in terms of legislative reform in the mechanics of the legislative process that would make it more difficult to be unethical as opposed to trying to define what ethics are.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, perhaps you have some ideas about this too. Maybe is moving to a professional legislature, does that or has that historically moved politicians into, I guess, what we call more ethical, a more ethical arena?
I'm not sure. I would argue that professionalism has the effect of separating the legislator from the public even more. I was going to suggest something along that line, that about the only solution to the problem of ethics in a legislature is to impose one of two sets of requirements on people who go into legislatures. One is that they be men and women without children, without property, without interest, without any other goal in life, and that they be put to death upon leaving the legislature so that they can't enrich themselves. And that would resolve one problem. Another would be to require them to divest themselves of all of those interests, at least for the time that they are in the legislature, and risk losing everything.
Mm-hmm.
Both of which are undesirable solutions. They would certainly not attract me to the legislature, and they would be very unlikely to attract anyone else. What we need is to educate the public so that it can clearly identify what the public interest is and then demand accountability of the people they select, so that we can then, from an educated public, select a more accountable and responsible set of legislators. If we did that,
mm-hmm.
then we would have very little problem with ethics, because behavior that was not ethical would be unlikely, mm-hmm. and it would be easy to see.
I think that's the key, easy to see.
Mm-hmm.
Your point, I think, is well taken, and while we laugh, it's very serious that in fact, it really is almost impossible to define good ethics and
mm-hmm.
bad ethics. But what we can do is to make sure, I think, that the public can demand openness so that it can all be seen.
Yes.
And then ultimately the public, in fact, does have to become the judge.
Mm-hmm.
Mary, do you have any... We're almost out of time, unfortunately, but maybe you have some comments that you'd like to kind of tie up here at the end.
One thing occurs to me, which is that one of the suggestions made in the 30s and 40s to clear up the problems the legislature obviously had at that time was to establish a unicameral legislature so that there would be no conference committees, all votes would be recorded, everything would be quite open. So there has been, people have considered for some time at least, a way or ways in which to establish this openness. Mm-hmm. Which sounds to me like a openness, not necessarily a unicameral legislature, mm-hmm. but openness obviously is what we have to have.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are a lot of people that are, a lot of people in the public and public interest and reform groups that are beginning to become more educated and more sophisticated in what they're demanding of the legislative process. I certainly agree with Andrea that has to be, I think, the primary way that we address this issue. Andrea, would you do you have some closing comments?
Yes. It seems to me that we're still asking the question, however many ways we go at it, of whether it's possible to have ethical behavior. And I think we need to remember that what is ethical behavior is what is consistent with the values and customs of the people of the time. And in a society which rewards selfish, self-promoting, private regarding behavior at the expense of the public interest, it's very hard to expect a representative legislator to behave differently when he puts on his legislator cap from the way in which he would behave if he were a private citizen. And to demand different codes of conduct for people who are representing our interests in the public arena while we pursue greed and corruption and conflict of interest and personal promotion and reward it in the private arena is inconsistent and is very unlikely to succeed. And as long as you have a social and political and economic system that poses that conflict for men and women in the legislature, there's going to be a problem of corruption.
Hmm. I think I'd like to end on a more positive note. It seems that we all have varying degrees of cynicism ourselves regarding this issue, and certainly I think that the positive aspect of this question is that, of this issue is that it really is the public's responsibility to educate themselves and to monitor and be the judge of what is ethical and unethical behavior for our elected representatives. What do you think would be the most that the legislature could do for itself in terms of the whole question of ethics?
Behave ethically, responsibly, and responsively.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than call names and point fingers at each other and propose impossible legislation, essentially, or meaningless legislation.
Do you think that when you say meaningless legislation, then do you think that, in fact, what you're suggesting is that they should scrap the legislation and simply act out what it is they're trying to write out?
Ideally, yes, I think they should. I don't think they're going to do that, though.
Because that's hard. I know.
Yeah.
The problem is that if they create a set of laws or a code of behavior that they don't use or that's not feasible, then it's just going to increase cynicism when it's perceived to be a sham. But on the other hand, it's much easier to do than to begin to deal with one another honorably. They should behave as though their every waking moment was being observed. And if they behaved in that fashion, ultimately they would believe in that fashion, I would hope. And partly it's our job to see to it that as far as possible they are observed. And that way it will make it easier for them to be ethical.
Thank you. That's the optimistic note that I wanted to end on. Thank you both very much for being here today.
Thank you.
This has been Alaskan Legislative Review, a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks. Our executive producer is Carla Tonella. Today's host was Wendy Redmond. If you would like a cassette copy of today's program, send $5 to KUAC-FM, University of Alaska, Fairbanks, Alaska, 99701.